Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Do you know someone who has trouble getting rid of stuff? Is their home cluttered with stacks of clothes, old books, and piles of newspapers and magazines? When does collecting things move from hobby to pathology? My guest today, Matt Paxton, is a national expert on the condition known as hoarding. Hoarding became a diagnosis in the 2014 update to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, one of the Bibles of the mental health field. Previously called pack rats, hoarders are those people typically suffering from a form of grief who are unable to part with items regardless of their utility. Often, hoarding is conflated with other mental disorders and is especially prevalent in the aging population and can be a sign of memory impairment or dementia. Paxton is the founder of Clutter Cleaners and for 8 seasons has been the host of the TV show Hoarders, which is seen on the A&E network. Paxton was recently in Tulsa and gave a seed sower lecture at the Learning Center on the OU Tulsa campus. Matt Paxton, host of the TV show Hoarders and founder of Clutter Cleaners, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Matt Paxton, welcome to Medical Monday. So glad to have you with us. Let's start by defining what you mean by the term hoarders.
Yeah, so hoarding is really defined as a mental disorder that's marked with an obsession or desire to acquire a lot of things. It's very textbooky, so I try to dumb it down to, hey, man, these people, something bad's happened to them, and they're looking for happiness and self-worth in stuff. Very similar to someone that's looking for happiness and self-worth in drugs or alcohol. Now, it's not exactly an addiction. It's more of a compulsion. But to get untechnical, these people are sad, and they're looking for happiness. And I think we all can relate to that. The numbers are staggering. Most people, if you ask someone, to say, yeah, I know someone that hoards. Well, if everybody knows someone that hoards, we're looking at 1 billion hoarders. No, I don't think it's 1 billion. But it is, I guess it's between 10 and 14 million is what we're hearing right now, which is roughly 5% of the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive number, and I always try to use this example to put it to scale. Obviously, we hear people talk about immigration a lot. It's a hot topic. Well, there's 11 million undocumented immigrants in America, and I'm telling you there's 14 million hoarders. I'm not saying one's more important than the other. I'm just trying to put it to scale. It's a massive issue, and no one's talking about it.
We all do know a hoarder. I mean, so when I was doing some background information on you for this program, I didn't realize at all the extent of it, but I could certainly relate because I have a grandparent. I had a parent who I would probably describe as hoarders. And so if we all do know somebody, why isn't there more awareness about it? And I mean, is this something that we've just kind of medicalized the way we medicalize sort of everything in our culture nowadays?
Well, we're Americans, man, and we judge people. And hoarding is a really ugly disorder. Physically looking, although it really has nothing to do with the stuff, it's all mental, but it ramifies out in a physical issue. And so we look at it, we go, oh my gosh, that's so gross. And then we put it on TV. I mean, I'm on the TV show. And is reality TV really a great place to discuss mental disorders? Probably not. I will tell you that we are very aware, the experts on the show, we are very aware that we are putting a mental disorder on the TV show for entertainment. We actually provide a year of therapy on the back end. For every person that appears on the show, we pay for that therapy. If we didn't pay for that therapy, I don't think it would be ethically right to put the people on the show, to be honest.
Wow, so the show's been about 8 seasons now?
Yeah, we're on 8 seasons.
On the A&E network. Was that something you did right away, to pay for the therapy?
Yeah, the experts, and I wish I could say it was me, I'm on the cleaning side. We also have a therapist on staff the entire time we're there. And the top 3 therapists said from the beginning, you cannot do this unless you do the therapy. And so I'll be honest, I was just cleaning houses. I mean, I knew what hoarding was, but even when the TV show started, I didn't really know what the word hoarding was. I just thought it was a bunch of, old ladies that had some cool stuff. We didn't use the word that much. And so I was really glad that the therapist enforced that at the beginning. And then once we started to get moving, we saw how important it was. Because, I'll tell you from my success rate with my cleaning companies around the country, if the hoarder goes to therapy, we have about a 60% success rate. If they don't, it's 0. And that's the important number. If they don't go to therapy, 0 success long term.
So it's a major commitment. I mean, it's a multifactorial. I mean, you're talking about therapy. I assume sometimes it probably necessitates medication. Of course, each individual is going to be different. But one thing I wonder is how frequently does hoarding coexist with other diagnoses or perhaps mental or physical illnesses for that matter?
Yeah, and so hoarding just became a recognized mental disorder in 2014 on the DSM-5. And so we're really just getting into the good research, to be honest. We definitely see OCD prevalent. We see ADD prevalent. I'll tell you the one that's really affecting me is we are seeing a lot of hoarders that are also being diagnosed with early onset dementia. And that becomes a really big challenge because the most successful way to cure hoarding is through a combination of cognitive behavior therapy and compassion-focused cleaning. That's wonderful. But if the person has dementia, that solution doesn't work. And so having the person present during the cleaning, if the person has dementia, is actually a really challenging, and I'll even say dangerous thing for that person, unless you have a specialist in dementia. And we don't. Not many of us. We're trash men. We're highly informed trash men, but we're not therapists. You know. And so it's a very dangerous thing when there's dementia present, and we actually encourage the family to have the person present, but not the actual person that has dementia.
One thing I wanted to touch on here is you mentioned that you're a cleaner. I mean, but you do have a therapist on staff, at least as regard to the TV show. But do you ever get pushback? In other words, you made a very conscious ethical choice through, I guess, the production team to include a therapist and to provide therapy for a year on the back end to people that agree to appear on the show. But do you get pushback from the mental health community or folks saying, you know, you're doing something that's irresponsible or you're exploiting
Absolutely.
The public?
Yeah, a lot of the time we do. And so then when they get involved and they find out and they hear me talk, I mean, it's one reason I'm doing these talks, like in Oklahoma. I mean, we come to town to make sure the community knows, hey, man, we're not bad guys. We're actually trying to help. Now, it's very easy to provide therapy on a TV show that has a budget for it. What if it's your grandma that lives in a trailer 2 hours away and has no access to mental health and has no access to cover the therapy? That's a little more difficult. And so, yeah, it's really hard to get when, you know, cousin Timmy thinks that grandma's just lazy and doesn't understand that there's a mental health issue. Saying to him, hey, man, not only do I need 10 grand to clean this house, but also I need you to make sure your grandma's going to therapy. That's when you really get a lot of pushback, because if the whole family hasn't bought into it, most academics, most healthcare providers understand that this is an issue because they see the volume coming through their system. And so the volume has forced them to understand it. But it's, you know, it's your cousin, it's your uncle, it's the guy at home that doesn't get it. And he gets really angry and he's mad because grandpa's piano is ruined. And that's where you really get the pushback. And so we have to educate at a large level, and then we also have to educate at the individual level to make sure the person understands. And we let our math do the at the home, we make it really clear. You can pay us to clean the house and not make her go to therapy, and the house will fill back up. But if you do go to therapy, the house won't fill back up. And we've actually learned not to, we won't accept the job if the family refuses aftercare. We think it's ethically wrong to take money from the family knowing that the house will fill back up if they don't do the therapy.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Matt Paxton. He's the host of Hoarders on the A&E Network. He's also the founder of Clutter Cleaners and spoke in Tulsa last week at a seed sower lecture at the OU Tulsa campus. And Matt, my understanding is you also, I mean, you are invited, I think, through the Department of Psychiatry. So you are often in medical settings being asked to speak or talk. I guess what percent of the time are you being invited from sort of community audiences or groups, and what percent of the time are you being invited by academic groups, or does it necessarily matter? Do they always overlap?
Well, I'll talk to anybody, man. I'm here to get the message out that hoarding is a legit issue and we need to be more compassionate. Definitely the requests from the community have increased a lot in the last year. What we're seeing is two things are forcing us to understand hoarding. One is that we are more aware. There's lots of books about it now. There's TV shows about it. There's documentaries. I mean, there's all you're hearing about a lot. And we used to call them pack rats. Well, now we know the word hoarding. But the aging population is really forcing us, because what's happening now is you've got three generations from age 50 to 80, well, really 50 to 90, to be honest, that are really packed tightly together, age groups. And you're seeing waves of families, people pass away. And so all the stuff is going to the next generation. Then all the stuff's going to the next generation. And it's happening really quickly. And so not that age causes hoarding. Grief and trauma cause hoarding. But age allows for more of it to happen. And so what's happening is when we see over the next 30 years, you see the largest group of Americans getting ready to pass away, if you look at a demographic perspective. There's just so many of them that are hoarding, and they pass away, and we're forced to understand it. And so really this last 2 years, people are saying, hey, man, we need to know more about this. And so, yeah, I mean, I could pretty much be full-time speaking if I chose to be on the road full-time, because people just are now asking. You know, 5 years ago, I was screaming, yelling, please listen to me, hoarding's an issue. And now it's like, oh, hey, man, I'm booked till next year. I can't come talk because there's just too many people that want to know about it.
So the recognition has definitely been increasing.
Yeah.
One thing I wonder,
and
too,
the stigma's going away, too, which is really important.
People are talking about it more.
Yeah, I mean, now I have, you know, these big, there's lots of hoarding support groups that are popping up all over the country. And, like, now it used to be embarrassing and shameful if you were a hoarder. Well, now I'll show up, and I mean, honest to God, a couple weeks ago I did a class in Seattle. And there was a hoarding group that had T-shirts. They were a hoarding support group, and they had T-shirts on, and they were like, we're all hoarders, and they're all sitting on the front row, and they're, like, proud about it. And they're like, yo, what up? Who cares? Let's do this, you know? And it's like, it's really cool to see that stigma going away.
One thing that I'm curious about is how frequently are you called in, or is your, you know, your company or one of the franchises called in after a death, where perhaps the problem wasn't acknowledged, or is it? Are you seeing a shift more away from the so-called estate sale and the decluttering after someone has died and, you know, gone to probate or heirs,
yeah,
versus now doing it in life?
So I hate to even answer this question, but it's the truth. It's about 60%, man.
60% of it is, yeah, after
it's
someone
after.
Has died.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's a big issue. Now, that number is decreasing, which is good. But unfortunately, families either aren't aware of it, which is still a big issue, or they try to avoid it, to be honest. And a lot of times they were aware of it, they knew about it. Then when grandma dies, they're like, all right, well, we got to go get the physical assets out of the house. And so they call us in. And there's still the same process. We're still having to diagnose the hoarder. We're having to get to know them because, I mean, gosh, especially where you guys are in Oklahoma, man, there's a high group of the last of the Dust Bowl kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they grew up in poverty and they grew up in squalor. And yet they 50 years later, they had money, they had assets, but they still lived in squalor because that's what they knew. And we're finding a lot of these houses that just because the person dies, it doesn't mean their hoarding behavior stopped. And so we have to still understand the disorder. They're just no longer with us. I think that number will equal out to 50-50. But yeah, we get a lot, especially on the male side. Women are more likely to, in our data, women are more likely to ask for help before they pass, and men tend to not ask for help, and they don't call us until they pass, and the family member calls us.
What are some of the, I mean, I know you get asked this all the time, but what are some of the most shocking things that you've seen or your crews have seen with regard to, you know, going on the job?
And we have found everything from, I had 300 cats in a house one time. 300 live cats. You know, we found $1 million in gold bars. That wasn't scary. It was just shocking. Nobody really wanted to touch them because we don't want the liability of touching the gold bars.
$1 million in gold,
yeah,
bars just kept under,
yeah,
a bed or something?
Yeah, it was in an old dot matrix printer box. They didn't know anything about it. Family had no idea. Grandpa had acquired it legally and hid it. And we found it. And we find deeds to ranches, to farms. We find stocks. Down where you guys are, we find a lot of deeds to drilling fields and things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the old stock certificates of the people that are passing right now, the stock certificates, they were still issued and they were printed out, you know, and so that's where the value is of those things. The sad things, we find letters, we find, oftentimes we find letters of, you know, a person that's 85 years old and they're coming out of the closet in a diary and they've never told anybody. So we find secrets, a lot of family secrets. The coolest thing I ever found was a lady. We found all the love letters that her husband wrote her in World War II. She got to go through all the letters and reread them.
Wow!
And so that, you know, highly emotional and exciting and sad and I mean all the. I mean, our job, man. In one day, you're going to laugh and cry in the same day, and probably be grossed out. Gross outs are normal. You know, the guys that do my kind of work are not exactly guys that get, you know, wheezy stomachs very quickly. But they are. We have to teach our guys how to hug, how to shake hands, how to give positive affirmation in a proper way, because you have to be able to celebrate this person when it's appropriate, and then you have to learn how to not lose it when something freaks you out.
So have you? I mean, to be really morbid, have you come across body parts and things like that?
Yes, we found it all. I mean, medical. We always find a ball jar full of stuff, and you're like, what is that? Is that a brain? Is it a turtle? Like, you don't know what it is. I mean, you'll find some really interesting stuff in the houses, and you just have to act like you've seen it. I mean, we have found, people that have passed away. Animals is the one that really shocked you. Like, I mean, I was in a house a couple weeks ago, and I walked into the bathroom, and there was a goat. A lady had a goat in her bathtub, like chained to the bath.
Oh, wow.
And I said, I have to ask, why is there a goat in your bathroom? And she goes, well, because the bedroom's full of chickens. And, like, to her, that made total sense. and we're like, okay. Bedroom full of chickens, and that's a silly example, but like everything the hoarder does actually makes sense if you get into their head, if you truly understand their trauma and their tragedy, and you understand how they've survived in that house. Every single thing they do makes total sense.
So, is the trauma that can lead to hoarding, or the event, or the disturbance? I mean, is it predictable, or how can you cluster those themes? Like what you said, it's loss, or
yeah, it's usually grief. It's usually loss, and I need to preface that. So the research that's out right now does not state this. But the research that we look at in hoarding is outdated. We've really just started getting into budgets to get new research, so it's actually a really exciting field to be in right now. There's lots of new research going on, and I'm actually doing a study right now with the Hoarding Project. It's called thehoardingproject.org. We're tying successful cleanouts to the tragedies, to the trauma that has done it. But my personal experience over the last 10 years, we've helped about 3,000 families, and I guarantee you at every single situation there was a trauma, there was a loss. So whether it was a divorce, abuse, a lot of times, I'll be really honest, it's sexual abuse from an early childhood, or a family member dies, a dad or a mom dies. And modern times we're seeing now, divorce and empty home syndrome has become a big issue. When someone raises their kids get married, they go to college, they move on, and now these women are, you know, mid-60s, and they have kind of lost their purpose, they've lost their way, and they start hoarding at a much higher rate. And so it's not all equal, don't get me wrong, and I think grief is very subjective. What might be really tragic grief for you and me is a very normal occurrence for someone else. But tragedy and trauma and grief, we all are built differently, and we all handle it differently. And so you kind of have to, you know, you have to reserve judgment when you're dealing with the hoarder, because the thing that caused the hoarding, you might have personally gone through it yourself and it was no big deal. But to this hoarder, it was tragic, and you have to respect that.
So is there an overlap between the hoarding behavior and collecting, that is people who have collections, or are those, one's a hobby, one's a compulsion?
Yeah, I mean, great question.
Is there a spectrum?
I try to dumb it down to this. Collecting's awesome. It's something we all do. It's something you share with your friends, your family, it brings you joy, it brings you happiness. When it crosses over to hoarding is when it actually causes a safety issue for your friends or your family. If you watch, you know, I'm on the TV show Hoarders. If you watch that TV show American Pickers, well, people get really excited about that because it's really cool stuff and you can sell it for money and there's a lot of monetary or utilitarian value. Well, the only difference between hoarders and pickers is my hoarders live in cities. They don't live in the rural area. If you go to Pickers, those guys are in a farm. They don't have a partner. Their wife is gone. You know, the issue, say I live downtown Tulsa, and my mother needs home health care provided. Well, that's when it becomes hoarding, because she can't get home health care into the house because the piles are so big. That's when it becomes hoarding. It's really, you got to take emotion out of that to cross the line between collecting and hoarding. Hoarding is when it causes public safety or damage to your friends and your family. And I really have to say this, sometimes people are just messy. That doesn't mean they're a hoarder. Some people are just filthy. And so what? If it doesn't affect their friends and their family, it's not a big deal. It's just how they live.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Matt Paxton. He's the host of the show Hoarders on the A&E Network, also the founder of Clutter Cleaners. And Matt, I wanted to delve a little bit into your background. You're an entrepreneur. You started Clutter Cleaners, and you now have expanded to, I think, over 60 locations across the country. So you've been successful. But your first efforts at business, you know, you had some failures at first.
I had a lot of failures, man. I had a Bling Bling Pizza was my favorite. It was a personal pan pizza with a fake gold chain. It was kind of like a Happy Meal for college kids. And colossal failure.
What went wrong with that?
Everything. Couldn't get anybody to buy it. I still think it's a good idea. I had a pre-sliced limes for Coronas. That was limes that were pre-cut, and you would just drop them in there. And right before we launched that, Budweiser came out with the Bud Lime. And so then we couldn't do that. I mean, I've had just, you name it, we failed. Once you're successful, it's very easy to laugh at those failures. I had a 15-year run that was pretty tragic, and I was broke, living on buddies' couches, and, you know, people were having prayer circles for me. I mean, it was a rough run, but ironically, I wouldn't be, you know, I am the leading expert in hoarding cleanup because I failed for 15 years. Because when I get into these homes with these hoarders, I get it, man. I'm not judging them. Like, we're equal, man. We've all had some pretty rough runs. And if I hadn't failed for 15 years, no way I would have been able to put myself in the mindset of these hoarders and understand them.
Now, my understanding is in your background, too, that you had a compulsion with gambling and that you've successfully treated it and overcome it or in recovery. How does that play a role in your development here in terms of dealing with hoarders or starting this company?
Well, for me, it's obviously directly related. I lost everything gambling at 25. I was actually an economist for the Federal Reserve coming out of college, and then I was an economist for Caesars Palace Casinos, and I got to Caesars. I was a young kid, 24, had all the money in the world and no responsibility, and living on the 7th floor of Caesars Palace, you can imagine how quickly that went south. And I got into a lot of trouble and lost everything and had to start over. And you know, I kind of searched and looked around and couldn't get work and really just continued to fail. And I struggled with my own gambling and got clean from that. What was really important is by the, and it was, you know, again, it was 10 years of just failure. And then when I got it all together, it was absolutely a part of my figuring out what to do with hoarders because I had failed so miserably. And so for me, it's kind of simple. It's really a simple connection. Like I know what it's like to have an addiction that takes over your life. I'm very lucky it wasn't drugs. I don't know that I would have. I think gambling's a lot easier to kick than drugs. And I had nothing to lose, to be honest. I was by myself. I didn't even have that much money. So for me, I'm very lucky. I'm glad it all came together. But I know it's a lot harder for a lot of my clients because they've had this addiction for 30, 40 years. You know, for me, I really only had it for about 10 years. And I was able to get re-addicted and refocused on positive things. I mean, I'm still addicted. I'm still an addict. I'm addicted to hoarding. I'm addicted to helping people. I'm addicted to solving this problem. I shouldn't sum it up that quickly and that easily. But I'll always be an addict. I've just been on a good run on being addicted to positive things for the last 15 years.
So when you were an economist for Caesar's Palace, you lived in the hotel?
Yeah, but it was an old thing back in Vegas, man. I don't anymore. But back then, if someone passed away in a room, they couldn't rent it for a year. And so they would let us live in the rooms for like $20 just to pay for the cleaners.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a fun run, dude. I was a young guy. It was fun, you know. And I can joke about it now because, I mean, my life did turn around. But it very easily could have not turned around.
That's so interesting. Is that still the policy to let employees?
So. No. Someone had asked me about that before, and I asked a buddy in the casino industry. And he said, "Absolutely not." He said, "No, not even close." But it was a fun, I mean, it was awesome. I lived in Tahoe, I lived in Vegas. I got to really see a lot of the country. I'm a big believer, man. Everything happens for a reason, and I will tell you, I've learned with these hoarders. You know, my life did turn around, not quickly, but it did turn around. And our hoarders' lives can turn around, and a lot of them don't think they can. And this is so cheesy, but, I mean, a lot of the hoarders are just really cool, good people that are currently in a bad situation. And with proper compassion-focused cleaning, with the proper therapy, they can get their lives turned around. Like this summer, I got invited to 8 weddings from former clients.
My goodness, really?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, like their life, they got into therapy and they got their life, and it's not quick. I mean, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years. There's lots of new therapy and support groups coming out. But they put the effort, right, and they had family that supported them, and they went through the awful cleanouts, and they came out on the other side. They did all the hard work. Where we see hoarders failing is they don't get through the hard work, they don't push through the cleanout, and they don't get involved in the aftercare. If they do that, their life can absolutely get better, and it really was just a small bad pocket in time. And so that's a direct parallel to my story. I mean, I'm on a good run. I've had a great 8 years, but I had 15 bad ones before it. But I went through the hard work. I went through the therapy, and I put my time in. And so, yeah, it's a direct correlation, and I really try to tell that story. And so I talk a lot about the classes like we had this week. The more you tell your true story, you know, the real bad things. You know, we live in a Facebook society. We don't tell our secrets. We hide them. Like, I think Facebook's one big lie. Just everybody on there telling them how great their life is, and it's really not.
Uh-huh.
Our hoarders don't have to do that. Their life is so visually bad that they don't have to keep up with the Joneses. They don't have to keep secrets. So you actually will see the hoarders actually a much funnier, more blunt, very open person because they can't hide their secrets. And you'll learn that with the work from the hoarders. You really start to dig them. They're actually fascinating people, brilliant, almost always super, super brilliant. Teachers, social workers, nurses are our top 3 careers for most of our hoarders.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, super smart. Engineers, lawyers, all that. I mean, it's super, super smart. They've just had something bad's happened to them.
That always makes
really
me
try to tell them.
In those professions, it always makes me wonder if folks, because I can relate to that as a doctor, I do teaching, is just you always want to hold on to that lecture or those notes or those charts because you never know when you're going to need them again, you know.
You might need them again, and it also is proof that you have value in the society. It's proof that you were here. It's proof that you taught. Paper's our biggest thing, man. Paper, paper, paper. It's evidence that we matter, and it comes back to that whole philosophy that I teach, which is hoarding is really just us looking for our happiness and self-worth. Same thing with teaching. Same thing with books. I mean, books. Look at books. Books are really just trophies. Books are really just trophies of a pocket in time in our life. How many people really go back and read the book 3, 4, 5 times?
Almost
Not
never.
Not many of us.
Yeah.
Right? But we put it on that shelf, and we celebrate it because that book really helped us at a low point in our life. Or it was something we did. I mean, I have all my college textbooks. I haven't even spoken about economics in the last 15 years, but I have all my economics textbooks because it made me feel special. It made me feel valuable. And that's what we do with stuff. That's what we do as Americans. It's very, we all do it at a different level. Our hoarders just do it at a much more grandiose and sad level.
All right, let's get practical here, Matt. What are some tips you could give our listeners for either how to avoid hoarding, or if you are, you know, tipping over into where collecting things has become an imposition on your life or your family member's life, what are some tips we can recommend to people?
Number one for me is equal in, equal out. Anytime you bring something into the house, something of the same size has to leave. It's really hard to do that. You buy a new shirt, you got to donate an old shirt. You buy a new pair of shoes, donate an old pair of shoes or sell them. You go to the grocery store, you got to make sure you got enough space for it in the. So much of my issue is that people just don't understand spatial.
Right.
They just flat out, their brains don't work that way. And so they buy, they consume, and they don't think that, oh, where are we going to put it? So equal in, equal out. And then I'm also a big believer in the 10-minute sweep. You should clean every night for 10 minutes. And that's it. 10 minutes only. Don't look at it as an hour or I'm going to wait. We're going to clean all day Saturday. When we wait and we push it up to be a bigger task, we don't get to it. If the whole family cleans together for 10 minutes, we each pick like a 2-foot by 2-foot area. If we do that every night, one, it sets the precedent that we do it as a family. It's important to our family. So we learn to clean on a daily basis. But also, you get the whole house clean by the end of the week. Mm-hmm. So the house never really gets away from you.
That is a very good strategy and one I could see I can very much relate to. On the former one, the equal in, equal out, it seems to run so counter to kind of the American ethos of acquiring. You know, consumption is good. We always want to have more stuff.
Well, our economy's built on that, man. Since World War II, our economy's been built on buy American, build American, buy. And yeah, and think about the generation that's up now. They've been able to buy on Amazon since they were born. And they're used to they've always had a cell phone, they've always had Amazon Prime, they didn't even have to go to the store, and they always had credit. They didn't even have to save cash to buy it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm facing, talk about, let's get realistic, I'm facing a very big uphill battle. How do I get Americans to stop consuming?
Huh. Well, I bet your TV show helps. I mean, so how did the TV show come about, actually?
You know, A&E was just trying to do a small little TV show. They bought 6 episodes. I wasn't even on the first 4. I was watching it from home when it aired the first time. And I was like, oh, I'd do that. That's kind of neat. And then they ran out of houses. They couldn't find 6 people to show their house on national TV. And so it took them a few months, and they found me, and I had a bunch. And so I ended up, you know, they called me on a Monday, and by Friday I was filming a TV show in Alabama.
My goodness.
And it was just pure luck. Somebody else didn't want to do it. And so I got on. And then they did not think that they didn't know how big hoarding was. And I always tell this story. Like, I was so broke, I actually had my cell phone was turned off when the first show aired because I hadn't paid my bill in 3 months. And I begged Verizon to turn the phone back on, and they let me receive phone calls. And we got about 200 phone calls. It broke my phone the next day, and I had 500 emails that day because we didn't know that everyone else in America was struggling with this.
Wow.
And so the show airs, and they're like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Probably 80% of the people were like, oh, my God, it's like a car wreck. Oh, my gosh. Well, my life's not so bad. And so it makes them feel better about their own stuff. But that other 20% was like, oh, my gosh, I'm not alone. I can get help. It can get better. And so my phone's been ringing ever since that day. It's literally the first day it aired. It's a big issue. I mean, it's not going anywhere. If we are getting ready to go into a 30-year bubble of more people aging into that 65 and over. And as more people start to get pressed with home health care, with moving into, you know, their last home, and then moving out of the home they grew up in, we're seeing more issues with it because it's just uncovering it.
Matt Paxton is host of the TV program Hoarder, seen on the A&E Network, and the founder of the company Clutter Cleaners. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.